Welcome to Dare to Dream. This is Debbie Dashinger. Pleasure to be here with you today. This show is sponsored by Dr. Dane Heer at Access Consciousness. They do exquisite energy healing work out into the world. They've got courses. You can become a facilitator in any country. Go to Dr. Dane Heer, H-E-E-R.com and accessconsciousness.com. I'm Debbie Dashinger, and I teach business owners and coaches and entrepreneurs and speakers the time-effective action steps to write a highly engaging book. I turn every author's book into a guaranteed international bestseller, fully done for the author. And I also show my clients how they can book and schedule podcast interviews and get massive results. If you would like my gift to you, my videos, and my templates about how you can be interviewed right now and what to provide and do, go to debbiedashinger.com/gift, debbiedashinger.com/gift. This show, Dare to Dream, has been nominated for two People's Choice Podcast Awards, as well as a Webby Award. We're consistently ranked in all of self-improvement in the top podcasts in the USA country, as well as other countries. We are currently trending also in Belarus, in Uruguay, and St. Lucia. And so grateful to all of you for feeling the message and this number one transformation conversation. Today's show is a conversation on meditation for daily stress. We're going to be talking about an incredibly unique way, certainly that I've never heard about, of looking at the possibilities around meditation, a new way of meditation that does not require effort nor breath exercise. My guest today is Michelle Pascal, who is a transformation and spiritual multidimensional artist, meditation teacher, singer, composer, photographer, film director, and author. He's even co-authored a book with the Dalai Lama. All of what he does is dedicated to supporting underserved populations, including LA's hardened population of parolees. He's an author of 20 books on spirituality, including Meditation for Daily Stress, 10 Practices for Immediate Well-Being. He is the director of We Are Never Alone film, one of the solutions of the Never Alone movement for the suicide prevention and mental health. And as a singer, Pascal has performed his Medicine Voice concerts several times at Carnegie Hall in New York City, where he will again perform this year's Christmas concert. He has been singing with famous musicians like Myron McKinley, music director of Earth, Wind & Fire, Verdeen White, co-founder of Earth, Wind & Fire, Paul Pesco, Mark Ledford, who is the vocalist of the Pat Metheny Group, and many more. To find out more about Michelle Pascal, go to michellepascal.tv. It's michellepascal.tv. And with that, I welcome Michelle to Dare to Dream. Hi, it's great to have you.
Thank you so much, Debbie. So happy to be with you and to all the people who love your show.
I have to say that you really appreciate, I think God was either laughing or ordained something just because you were going to be on the show today. So this morning, we found out that our city is going to be digging up all our driveways down the up and down the entire block. So they've got these massive machines, jackhammers and cranes digging. And the noise has been beyond all of a sudden just today, right? And on top of it, we have three dogs. We're all working from home. And we've got three dogs. So the dogs think this is a five-star alarm, that there are people outside who could be a threat. So they're all barking. And I sat here this morning knowing you were coming on the show thinking, this is so bad. I think I have to reach out to Michelle's people and I need to reschedule. And all of a sudden it dawned on me, how hilarious. Michelle teaches, like, your premise of meditation is the ability to meditate, the importance of meditating in the midst of chaos. And so you brought the chaos just for the show to see what's possible. How is that possible?
Your question is very important because if I ask what means meditation to you, or when I ask the question in America, everyone reply, this is meditation. So when you compare this cliché, and if you want to know what is the etymology of meditation, this is what I learned in my monastery, for example. What is the Tibetan etymology of the word meditation? It doesn't mean at all the cliché, etc. No, meditation, it means exactly I train my mind in my daily life. And we can adapt today and we can say I train my mind in my daily stressful life. So this is the authenticity of meditation, how to calm my mind in the chaos, not far from the chaos of my life. Because as you know, Debbie, our world is in a huge chaos. So it's a world phenomenon. So how can we be quiet? How can we train our mind in the stressful situation? This is the authenticity of meditation. Let's develop more. If you go to calm your mind in a quiet place, this is beautiful. This is a sort of relaxation. It's like you go in holidays. But when you go back to your stressful life, it's the same when you go back after your holidays at home. After 1 or 2 days, you lose your tan, you are stressed again, you lose the benefit of the holidays. This is the same. If you go far from your stress, to be quiet, in a quiet place, it's easy. And you don't progress. But when you go back to your stressful life, you are stressed again. I remember one day I was in a Mountain View at Google in California, and one of the big managers said to me, Michel, we have a question. We pay a lot of beautiful yoga studio, amazing swimming pool, fitness for our employers. They love that. But when they go back to the desk, to the office, they are stressed again. How can you explain that? And I say to this manager at Google, your question is your answer. Because of course, if you go far from your stress to calm your mind, when you go back to the stressful situation, you create a sort of spiritual depression. Poof, it's a sort of depression. So it means that you create an up and down. So a sort of roller coaster like that. And you print in your brain, there is a place I can be quiet, my yoga studio, my beach, and there is a place, oh my gosh, I am so stressed. So to think like that about meditation, this is a wrong perception of meditation. Meditation in an authentic Tibetan Buddhist way doesn't mean at all that. And what I say to you, maybe it's not my opinion. It what say my Rinpoche, it was what say his Rinpoche, it is what say all the Tibetan masters since 3,000 years. So this is the reason why we need to calm our mind in the chaos of our life. Your situation this morning, it is a perfect example. Now, my question, me, was how can we calm the mind in the chaos, but with no effort?
Yes,
I say no effort. This is the main question, because you know, we live in a world very, very difficult. So when we ask to someone to calm the mind in the chaos, this is very difficult. For example, I will share with you many times what the prisoners of Los Angeles, they say to me. They say, Michel, if you say to us as a prisoner, take a deep breath, be focused on your breath, be mindful. They say, if you say that to us, you are not respectful. You don't realize our life is difficult. Just you copy-paste an old map in our world. And I replied to the prisoners, this is exactly this new approach of meditation that I developed with you today. I mean, our world has changed. If we have no money problem or not too much, if we have time, if we have not a lot of problem in our life, for sure, we can train our mind by ourselves. Me, I come from a family very violent. So I was born in Paris, raised in Paris, and my family was very, very violent. So when I was a child, I was scared. And I was under my bed. And I was unable to calm my mind by myself. So close my home, there is a church. And I start to go at the church. And just when I enter in the church, I felt the peace, the calming energy. And when I was a child, I realized there is no life without peace. And I realized that I was not able to calm me by myself, but I must be tuned on a calming vibration with no effort. When you are a child, Debbie, my daddy punched me 2-3 times per week during 15 years. You cannot say, oh, I must meditate. That makes no sense. But I realized when I was a child that just the fact I enter in this simple church, and I don't talk about religion, I don't talk about God. I love the church when the church was empty. But I felt peace. And in 1 second, I was like that. So this experience was my first experience with meditation, my first experience with peace. And this is that I have developed year after year. So with the prisoners of LA, for example, I never ask any effort. Again, everyone has his own way of meditation. You know, there are different approaches. And every approach is good. Every approach is good. Just me, I was interested for my case at the beginning when we are unable to meditate. I am unable to be concentrated. When you are abused during 15 years, you are unable to make an effort. And so I give my life every day to population underserved. I teach for the kids, gang member, for police officer, for firemen, for doctors, also for celebrities. A celebrity is unable to be concentrated. It's not possible. So the most important for me was how to calm our mind without effort. No effort, no concentration. In meditation, many times experts ask to us what we are unable to do, to be focused. I'm sorry, I cannot be focused on my breath. I have too much problem in my life. I cannot. This is exactly the angle of our new approach of meditation.
Thank you for sharing about your upbringing. That's very profound because it just shows you really intimately understand what it's like to be in that state at a young age. And it's very true about the world we live in right now. It's so interesting. So I want to go back to this idea. You know, this is why I was initially attracted to you. So funny how connected you and I are between the people we know intimately in the transformation world. And then as it turns out, you work with my brother and sister-in-law. And I didn't know any of this before I started to notice you and see, here is Michel Pascal. He is meditating in New York City Times Square, like the cacophony there alone. And you kept bringing up all these examples of when to meditate. There was a great, also on Instagram, folks, get his, be on his Instagram because you'll get the greatest little videos. There was a great video of you being a very calm and peaceful space, and you could feel it emanating through the video. And you had these two tall, husky fellows, you know, being very chaotic and talking at you, and you just maintained your energy of peace. And so this is what you show. I've never heard this before. This is so brilliant. And so here, God laughed. God brought in all these crazy machines outside to be digging on this day and the dogs yelling. And I found peace. As soon as I recognized the hilarity in that and you coming on, I had peace. And I said, it is so perfect and beautiful. Thank you. And then I also had gratitude and said, oh, and thank you that the city cares so much about where I live that they are completely redoing. We don't even have potholes, and they're completely redoing and beautifying the streets. So I had all this gratitude. And so naturally it has gotten quiet outside, honestly, just the moment we began.
Just to go back about what you say, Debbie, you say it's very new. In Tibetan Buddhism, it's not new at all.
Mm. No.
What it's okay. new for you is the authenticity. Mm. But sorry to say that. What I repeat to you today, to calm the mind in a stressful situation, this is what said all the Tibetan master since 3,000 years ago. It's not my opinion. Just I repeat to you the teachings that I have received from my Rinpoche, from his Rinpoche, like a lineage. So authenticity seems new in America. I was surprised when I came from Nepal to LA because everyone say, oh, Michel, it's very new to meditate in the stress. But for me, it was not new. And since 3,000 years, it's not new. It's what repeat every Tibetan master every day. What is new? This is the authenticity of the teaching. For sure it's new. Because the cliche of meditation, it's when you are in a lotus position, in a resort, with a matcha tea on the beach, whenever. So, of course, it's not meditation. It's a blabla-tation. It's blabla. It's blabla-tation. Blabla, it's something not efficient. I invite you to go in a resort to try to imitate a monk. And when you go back to your stressful life, you are stressed immediately, a few minutes after. So it's a blabla, it's blablatation. So the thing is to calm the mind in the stressful situation, this is the awakening. The awakening, it is not to be in a levitation space. No, the awakening, it's when we are in Times Square, for example, with your brother, David. I guide a meditation for David, with David, in Times Square a few weeks ago. And when you feel the peace in the middle of the chaos, really, Debbie, I invite you to live this experience. It's a revelation for your life. You say, yes, we can. Oh, I can be quiet. I can be like a mountain in the middle of the storm. Make the experience to be quiet in a conflict, for example. Oh, what an awakening. I train Uber drivers, for example. What do? We go at the rush hour on the freeway. So the Uber driver drives, and I am close to him or to her, to guide a meditation to upgrade the concentration of the driver. And after one or two times, the brain of the Uber driver has understood. The brain understands, I will be quiet in the traffic. So we change the perception of the traffic. We change the perception of Times Square. We change the perception of a jail. All is in our mind. So when we realize that, this is the awakening, the miracle of our life.
Wow. I just had this huge feeling physically when you talked about what you did in Times Square. And, you know, yesterday I had a very interesting experience. I was running late to get to an appointment and I was feeling a lot of stress getting there and embarrassment because I was going to be late. And I really acknowledged to myself, I do this. I do this periodically, not everywhere in my life, but I do this enough that it creates stress. So it's self-created stress. I was hearkening back to what it was like for me growing up. Very, very, very chaotic household. A lot of fear, a lot of anger, a lot of misplaced responsibility, some level of insanity for sure. And that this was my way of recapitulating that experience, that chaos within myself, and the way I was manifesting it was by choosing on some level to be late and then all the subsequent things that happened. So I got so clear. First of all, I forgave myself with acknowledging that. And then I got so clear how much I wanted to release it. And so in hearing what you're saying, I can realize that this induced calm everywhere holds a lot of possibilities. So I'd like you to go into that for people who are in gangs, who have addiction, who are in prisons, or have experiences like what I just described or otherwise, where the stress comes or through work or through family, et cetera. How can we set ourselves up? What is the technique for us to go there?
First, again, let's go back to the authenticity. As my Rinpoche, Chepadanje Rinpoche, said to me, and as Chatral Rinpoche, say Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche, Dudjon Rinpoche, Kalu Rinpoche, so all the Tibetan masters, they explain many times that meditation, it's more than a technique. It's a transmission of energy. So, because how does it work? Again, we cannot calm the mind by yourself. So we need to be tuned, we need to be guided by a meditation teacher, but this teacher must be very quiet. So when I guide a meditation in Times Square, for example, for David, your brother, or when I guide a meditation for lifers, you know, prisoner incarcerated for life, immediately, when we start to guide the meditation, the person releases the tension. This is the key. Because we know in neuroscience, when we put electrode on the brain, we know at the moment you release your tension, you upgrade the serotonin, the hormone of the well-being. And like that, you become addicted to the serotonin. Every emotion, it's an addiction, a neurochemical addiction. So when you have you release, you feel all the serotonin in your body. As you know, as Deepak explained all the time, every cell is connected to the brain, like electric circuit. So, you release. At the moment you have this hoof, you become addicted to the peace. And I will say it's a sort of cognitive re-education. You re-educate your brain, and especially in a stressful situation. So at the moment, for example, David comes with me in Times Square, and I guide for one of our practice, meditate like a mountain. David immediately feel more quiet. So it means if we put electrode on the brain of David, that he upgrade his serotonin, he becomes addicted to the serotonin. And as he said to me, now every time I go to Times Square, I have another perception of Times Square. This is the same for a prisoner. So the same for an Uber driver, the same for every people. So like that, we re-educate the neurochemical system of the person. And I can share with you, Debbie, probably one of the most exceptional results of America that we have on the prisoners at Amity Foundation in downtown LA. Amity, this is the one of the biggest foundations for the reinsertion of the prisoner. So we have a prisoner, parolees, and lifers. Since 5 years, we have zero suicide. Since 5 years, we developed this program. There is zero suicide. And prisoners, this is the population the most affected, of course, by trauma, depression, addiction, suicide. They are extremely affected by that. We have zero suicide. So this result is absolutely incredible. It means that the program at Amity works. And I will say to you that it's crazy to realize that the prisoners, the homeless, the poorest people of Los Angeles today are the pioneers of a new spiritual time. They are pioneers. They prove that it works. So I develop also the program for the U.S. Army, for the VA in San Diego. I will go to John Hopkins University in Baltimore. They asked me to come to explain the result of the zero suicide and how is it possible. Of course, I mean, it's a holistic therapeutic approach at Amity. We have yoga, nutrition, coaching, motivation. It's a fantastic program. But our meditation, this is one of the favorite activities of the prisoners. So this is the reason why also with David and Tamara, we decide to create Mental Help. Mental Help, it's a program by video, very broadcast, that we will share to the internal TV of jail, or shelters, or hospital. In many, prisons, they have internal TV. So we will share, we will offer many, many videos to the prisoner, to women abused in the shelters, to doctors in hospital everywhere, in many countries, in English and in Spanish, in Guatemala, Salvador, Nicaragua, London also, because we want to expand this amazing result that we have. You know probably the crime in Los Angeles since COVID, plus 400%. 400%. Homeless, plus 26%. It's suicide, as you know. This is the biggest taboo of America. The second causality of death from 10 years old to 34 years old. So in the difficulty of our world, the result, the hope, comes from the poorest people of Los Angeles, the prisoners, the homeless. They are our heroes. They are our spiritual teacher. Because again, it is a thing to study depression, to make data, to make research. It's beautiful. But it's another thing when we have zero suicide on the population, the most affected by depression.
You likened meditation to shamanism and talked about how it was related to Tibetan shamanism. Can you go into that a little bit more? Because I talk a lot about shamanism and that world on this show. And so that came as a great surprise to hear you mention that.
I have the blessing since 24 years to work with my friend Navarro Apache, my friend Chumash in California. And in Buddhism, so my school is Nyingmapa. Nyingma comes from Padmasambhava, but Nyingma come also from Bön. Bön tradition was before the story of the Dalai Lama. This is the Tibetan shamanism. So when you compare Tibetan shamanism and Navajo tradition, Chumash tradition, Inuit tradition, there is a lot of correspondence, a lot of correspondence. How to use the stones, how to use the element. It's shamanism before was a universal language. Of course, when we come from a monastic life, when we have took refuge, this is my case, hein? I pronounce my vows and I took refuge. In Buddhism, in a lineage, the teaching that we receive, for example, about shamanism is very different than the usual information that we have about shamanism in our world. To give an example, very concrete, in an authentic shamanic way, like in Bön tradition, No Rinpoche will say, I am a healer. No Rinpoche. In LA, when I came in LA, as I said to you, I was surprised. Everyone say, I am a healer. Yeah, I am a healer, I am a shaman. Me, I say nothing, but I know and I remember what teach me my Rinpoche. Rinpoche said to me, Michel, when someone start to say to you, I am a healer, you can say, yes, bye-bye, and you move. Because the person, if the person say that, the person develop a spiritual ego. So the person can have capacities, but the person develop a spiritual ego. So it means that the person develop perturbation in the magnetic fields around him or herself. So this is the reason why in an authentic Tibetan shamanic way, Bön tradition, no Rinpoche will say, I am a healer, I am a shaman. The fake say, I am a shaman. The authentic never say that. You have the same for Navajo and Apache. I remember one day my friend Navajo, they brought me in Flagstaff at the post office. And they say, Michel, take a look. There is an old map. He stamp on envelope. He was a little old guy with glasses and he stamp envelope. They say to me, Michel, this guy, he is the most important authority of the Navajo people. And you cannot imagine a simple old guy with his little glasses stamp. No. But in Flagstaff, you have a lot of people. Oh, I am a shaman, I am a healer. So just we could develop more. I have it's not a conference, I could develop more. I do that in a retreat. But just for example, when we talk about shamanism, it's like when we talk about reincarnation or when we talk about meditation. When you compare the authenticity of the teaching and the poverty that we have in America, the difference is huge, huge. If we talk about reincarnation, for example, you will be surprised, but the word reincarnation doesn't exist in Tibetan. No. The word reincarnation was created by the Jesuit priest when they came to observe the Tibetan people. And they wrote, oh, Tibetan people, they believe in reincarnation. First, in Buddhism, there is no belief system. First, there is no belief. So when the Jesuit priest says they believe in, there is no belief system. Second, the word reincarnation doesn't exist. We cannot translate the concept. The only way to talk about that is to talk about science, to talk about physics quantum, the continuity of the energy. And every energy has a memory. So the teaching of reincarnation, for example, is extremely complex, fascinating. It's like a science. So it's the same in Tibetan shamanism. It's an incredible science. But the difficulty that we have in our world, it's very difficult to have access to the authenticity in spirituality. It's very, very difficult. Because first in shamanism, the fake, they talk a lot for sure, but the authentic, they refuse to talk. They protect the acknowledge. They don't want to talk. I remember in my monastery in Kathmandu, many American people came the Saturday morning. The monastery was open to the public. And they said to the abbot of my monastery, "Oh, I know my reincarnation. I was a prince. I was an amazing doctor, an amazing artist." And just the abbot many times say, "It's funny, Michel. Listen. They never say I was homeless, I was prisoner, I was a terrible person." No, no, they project all the time. So I remember just he said to the, "Oh, but if you know your reincarnation is good," just he replied that because he didn't want to develop the nectar of the teaching. When we are in a retreat in Hawaii, we have time to develop. So if you are interested by authentic shamanism, because you must know this is the same teaching in Tibetan, for example, with the lava stone that we can find in Hawaii. The teaching about how to use stones or how to meditate like a mountain, for example, or how to meditate with the fire energy, etc. This teaching is very, very fascinating. So when we are in a retreat, I have time for that.
That's beautiful. Just the idea of meditating like a mountain has really a profound effect just to hear, to step into that energy. I want to also bring up the fact that you're an exquisite singer. You're called a transformational meditation singer, and only one of a handful in the whole world. So you've got this voice that offers these guided visualizations, and they create a really deep healing experience. You've performed these cosmic medieval melodies at Carnegie Hall. You've sung here in LA at Agape for Michael Bernard Beckwith, also with Deepak Chopra at his event, and other impressive musical people like Earth, Wind, and Fire. And I've heard your recordings and seen your videos. It definitely is a gift from God. Can you talk a little bit about your vocal gift? Where did that come from and how did you discover it?
As I said to you, I have the blessing to be abused during many years by domestic violence. So for me to sing when I was so young, 8 years, 9 years, was the idea to create my monastery, my inner monastery. To sing in Navajo tradition, to sing means to pray. So this is the same word. In Navajo language, the medicine men, they say to sing, it's to pray, same word. So when we sing, we shift the vibration inside of us. And after I start to sing on stage, I was 9 years old. And in France, I became professional singer at 16. And when I was around 27, 28, I have the blessing that Mark Ledford, the famous vocalist of Pat Metheny, listened to me and he said, "Oh, Michel, come with me in New York." So Mark presented to me with a lot of exceptional musicians, exceptional jazzmen, and I start to sing like that in New York. And today, as you know, I have the blessing to sing with Myron McKinley, the music director of Earth, Wind & Fire. Myron is my music director. And we perform at Carnegie Hall every year together. And it will be the case again this year. But I can sing for you now. Of course. To sing, it's to pray. Let's pray together.
Let's pray. Oh, that's divine. Thank you.
Of course.
For agreeing even before the question came out of my mouth.
I will sing for you, Om Mani Padme Hum. You know, Om Mani Padme Hum in Tibetan, it's an amazing prayer. It means, may all I can say today, may all I can do today, full of love. full of love in any situation. And I would say, especially when life is difficult. It's like, you know, the prayer of Saint Francis, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Omani Pemium, it's the brother-sister prayer of Saint Francis.
Deeply moved.
Thank you, Debbie.
Deeply moved. Wow. That was so heart moving and beautiful. Thank you for that gift. Are you ever nervous before performing with these big people in huge venues?
No, nervous of what?
Because you are like a mountain?
No, because... To be nervous, it's an addiction. There is no sense to be nervous of what? We will die. Nothing exists. All is a mental projection. To be worried about what? No, instead of to lose our energy, to be worried, we need to offer our energy to let God sing through us. This is different. When we are afraid, it's because we feed our ego. Oh, what people do we do? People we love the show. Do we love me? Oh, blah, blah. We stay at the stupid ego level. When we go to sing, just we open our hand and that's it. So nervous about what? When we deeply understand that, we are okay. There is no problem. There is no fear, there is no panic, all these emotions are mental poison. It's a mental poison. And this poison comes from ignorance because we don't realize how we lose our life in a stupid addiction of fears. Every emotion, it's an addiction. So instead of to be addicted to be stupid, it's more intelligent to be addicted to be happy, no?
Yes. Better not to be ignorant and stupid at all or addicted. And what else do you sing? What do you sing with Earth, Wind, and Fire? Where do your songs come from?
It's funny because, so I compose most of my music, but... for Christmas Eve, for example, I sing a lot of cover of Christmas, a lot of very beautiful melody like Smile from Charlie Chaplin. But I try to create a new style of cover with to use my voice as an instrument. And it's very important to realize that when we sing, it must be unforgettable. Each note must be unforgettable. to think it's a responsibility. 2 days ago, I was giving a concert at Amity Foundation with the prisoners, or we can give a concert at Carnegie Hall. This is the same. But as a joke, at the end of the show, we finish by September. I make a cover of September with Myron McKinley. And it was amazing to see all the prisoners jumping, dancing. We create a sort of new version of September with Myron, because when the prisoners, they saw Myron, they say, please play September. So Myron start and I start to sing, and we create a new version of September. Very special version. I don't hear you, Debbie. What you say?
Sorry. Are these things videotaped when you perform?
Yes, we have filmed the concert with one or two simple camera. We will edit and I will post some extract of that. Yes, for sure.
Beautiful.
But when I give retreat in Hawaii, or I give retreat, as you know, in Los Angeles, in Malibu, I give retreat at Serra Monastery. So Serra Monastery become my place in LA, where people, I can meet people and we can have a retreat day in a monastery. It's beautiful. It's a Franciscan monastery. So they are very open to everyone. You know, hein, Franciscan means hospitality, means to be kind. And I love in the library, in the shop, they sell a lot of Buddhist books. It's beautiful to see how Franciscan priests are very open to everyone. And but for sure, when we spend a day in a monastery, I develop the practice of the mountain. So the practice of the mountain, maybe you will be surprised, but it comes from the time of Jesus. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was what we name in Orthodox tradition the meditation of Jesus. So I explain, based on historical proof, what we name hesychasm in Orthodox Christianity. Hesychasm was a way of meditation created from the time of Jesus. And the first practice, this is to meditate like a mountain. So this is very shamanic, because to meditate like a mountain means to be more grounded, to be reconnected to the earth element. Mm-hmm. When we are stressed, we feel alone. When we calm the mind, when we are like a mountain, we never feel alone. We don't feel alone. We are reconnected to the elements. We are reconnected to the people of the stones. You know, in shamanism, we don't say the stones. We say the people of the stone, or the people of the trees, the people of the flowers. And we consider every stone not like a thing, but like a person. So with an energy, with a story, with a character, etc., etc. So when we meditate like a mountain, this is very, very ancient. So I take time in a retreat to explain the origin of this meditation. And after, we practice in the monastery, facing the mountain of Malibu with the ocean. It's incredibly beautiful. And we practice like a mountain. And after, I give a concert in the beautiful chapel of the monastery. So I sing some Ave Maria or some Humani Padme Hum a cappella. And this church is incredibly beautiful. At 360 degrees, you have the view on the ocean. Mm. It is so, so beautiful.
And when is this? When is Malibu?
The next retreat is all is sold out except July 18. July 18, we have two, three seats left, I think. So you can contact me on my Instagram, Michelle Meditates, and I will connect you to my team and they can take care of you, of course.
I know that some other things you talk about, and they're in your books too. Should people want to dive into the books, and our work with you is also meditating like a horizon, meditating like a dolphin, which sounds pretty glorious, like a wave, meditating like a kiss. So meditating like a kiss helps you feel less stress in a romantic situation?
Of course. It's a special visualization that we do when we meditate like a kiss, to breathe in our heart all our love and to send our kiss, to send our good energy to someone that we love, but also to some people that we don't love. And also to send our love to a flower, to a child who suffers, to a star in the sky, to the universe. It's an incredible practice with no expectation. When we start to make a practice with an expectation, we stay at our ego. Oh, I want to be a healer. I want to help you. I want to save you. No. An authentic practice has no expectation. It's like when we say we become like a rose, gives her perfume without reason. That's it.
Michelle, this is Dare to Dream. What do you next dare to dream? What are your future dreams and goals?
For me, this question doesn't exist because every second is a dream. And when I say it's a dream, I will reply to you through neuroscience. And you know that when I see you through this computer, at the first perception, my brain doesn't know it is a computer. 2 milliseconds after, my brain recognizes it's a computer. So everything that I can see when I see you, it's a mental projection. So we live all time with a perpetual mental projection. And as we explain in the Tibetan shamanic tradition, the yoga of dream that I teach in Hawaii, all what we see is a dream. There is no difference between to dream and to be wake up. This is the same way in the brain. So all is a mental perception. So my hope is just to be present now with you, Debbie, to be kind with you, to try to take care of every person who will watch your show. This is my only dream. To be more alive. This is my dream.
Mm. Guru Rinpoche, you've said your Tibetan lineage, Buddhist lineage, it goes all the way back to the 8th century. Can you elaborate on that?
Padmasambhava, what we name in Buddhism, the realization. The realization means he was in Parping, it's a little town in Nepal, and in a small cave around the 8th, 9th century, suddenly he realized what I just explained to you, what science proved today. He realized at the 8th century that nothing exists. All is a perpetual mental projection. So when you start to realize that, wow, it changed your life. So after, from Nepal, he came to Tibet. He has a lot of disciples. And my Rinpoche, Chepa Dorje Rinpoche, was also the last descendant of Marpa. Marpa, if you know Buddhism, was the first disciple of the Buddha who wrote the teaching, the sutra. So Chepa Dorje Rinpoche was his last descendant. And I met Chepa Dorje Rinpoche in Paris. He was my Rinpoche in France. And I have the blessing to be close to him during 13, 15 years, something like that. And he passed away, but he's present in my heart every second. There is no 1 minute in my life I don't feel his presence.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Debbie.
Mm. And here's to more in the future. And for folks who would like to follow Michelle Pascal, if you would like to go to his Instagram and you can follow him there and see all his offerings and great videos, it's Michelle Meditates, M-I-C-H-E-L, Meditates. And his website is Michelle Pascal, PASCAL.TV. I end today's show with this quote from the Dalai Lama. If every 8-year-old in the world is taught meditation, we will eliminate violence from the world within one generation. Subscribe to this number one transformation conversation, Dare to Dream. My guest next week is Scarlett Raven. She's back on the show for a third time. She's a listener favorite, and she's an intuitive guide, powerful entrepreneur. Scarlett has a new book out and new information about being a starseed channel. She's going to be sharing wisdom and healing suggestions for the audience. If you love the podcast and you want to see what we look like, it's really worth it. Go to YouTube and subscribe there. It's youtube.com/Debbie Dashinger. Thank you for all your comments. I read them all on behalf of myself and every guest. We're very grateful that you're so engaged, and we do appreciate hearing from you. And remember, folks, don't just dare to dream, dare to turn all your dreams into your reality, and meditate like a mountain.